And I have absolutely no idea what he was going to say. And so, but when he said, when I saw that title, it's wrong, but I thought of a Beatles song. It's been a hard day. And so I was thinking, being a music person, it made me think of the Beatles and the different. But of course, mostly, I'm guessing most of you over the past month or so have been listening to Christmas music. Oh, we had Christmas music. And I'm a music teacher. I've been 25 years of teaching, 21 in the public schools and 4 in the Kalamazoo Christian. And I've been listening to music that's Christmas related since July, because I have to pick all my music, and my middle school band students, their first concert is Christmas. So we've been doing Christmas music all school year. And they're like, oh, what's September? Why do we have to do Christmas music? I said, go to Walmart. You will find Christmas stuff hanging up right now. And every year, I have the students make a list. Just name every Christmas song you can think of. And so I'll stand at the board, and they will just call them out, and we'll just have this mammoth list of Christmas songs. But I'll make two separate lists, and they won't know why they're two different lists. And so when the list is done, we've got all the songs, I'll ask them, what's the difference between the two lists? And eventually, they'll usually figure it out. One half is sacred, one half is secular. So sacred dealing somehow with religion. So if it's got angels, if it's got Jesus, if it's got anything to do with the religious aspect of Christmas, it's on the sacred list. If it's Santa or grandma getting hit by a reindeer or any of those kinds of things, then it goes under the secular list. And it's fascinating to them that there might be 5 songs on the sacred list, but they'll come up with sometimes 100 secular songs. Just a mammoth amount of hippopotamus and all the different things you can come up with Christmas that have absolutely nothing to do with religion. And for Christmas, it's such a weird, weird holiday from that perspective, because there are so many non-Christians that celebrate Christmas. And for Christmas, the holiday on December 25th, as it was talked about last week, that long predates Christmas. Celebrating on December 25th is a holiday that existed before Jesus was born. And so the idea of celebrating, there used to be people who celebrated on December 25th a holiday called Saturnalia. And with that, we've got birth of was worshiping the sun god. And when the church, the one church for the Reformation, and they're trying to come up with, well, we want to de-emphasize that holiday, because it was just wild, it was crazy, it was party, it was just a lot of crazy stuff going on. But then the church, they were trying to figure out, as a church, what do we believe? Because some people in church believed in the Christmas story, that Jesus was born of a virgin. Some people said, no, that part's not true. And just the church was trying to decide, us as a church, in the beginning, the early sides of the church, what do we really believe in? And so they came up with their foundations, and they believed that there was the Christmas story that we know today. And so they made that part of the canon, and so they came up with the service or the mass for Christ, which is where we get Christmas. It's a mass for Christ. And so when are they going to know? Because it doesn't say in the Bible when Jesus was born. And so they came up with, well, let's de-emphasize this other crazy party holiday. Instead of celebrating the sun god, let's celebrate the birth of the Son of God. And so the church decided Christmas is December 25th. And my students are often just shocked that, no, Jesus was born on December 25th. My mom said, I'm not saying mom's wrong. He might have been. You know, I don't know. I can't tell you. No, July 22nd is when Jesus was born. The Bible doesn't say. And so for me, I have someone that I used to teach with. She does not celebrate her birthday. She celebrates Airplane Day because she was adopted as a baby from China. And when her parents got her, she came on the airplane. And the day that she arrived, that's Airplane Day. So when she was like 3 or 4, she would say, I was so confused because I was the only one I knew who celebrated Airplane Day. And she didn't get why everybody didn't else. You had storks, she has airplanes. Where do babies come from? It was confusing to everybody. But so she celebrated Airplane Day. And so, and I'll tell my students, it doesn't matter the day that Jesus was born. It matters that he was. It matters who he was and what he represented. And so for us, as here as we celebrate the birth of Christ, we have Christmas as a conflict. You know, people will get upset, oh, we take the Christ out of Christmas. And because it was a party first. December 25th was a party first. And it's always been this fight between sacred and secular. And as a musician, I look at it from a music perspective. Now, does anyone know what single song has sold more copies than any other song in history? Yes. White Christmas. White Christmas. The Bing Crosby recording has sold, and there's not even a close second. It has by far sold the most copies of any other recording ever. One of the reasons is that it sells every year. It just keeps coming out, and so the latest song by Lady Gaga will sell a ton, or Justin Bieber, or whoever, this year. Beyonce will sell several million, but Bing Crosby, his family's still making money on a recording that he made in 1942. It's by far the biggest selling song, and 3 of the top 5 are Christmas songs by Bing Crosby. The dude's family is set. You know, they're still making family. But White Christmas, to me, changed music forever. Forever. I love the song. And it was written by one of my favorite composers, Irving Berlin. There's another great composer named Jerome Kern. And Jerome Kern was asked, what place does Irving Berlin have in American music? And Jerome Kern answered, Irving Berlin doesn't have a place in American music. Irving Berlin is American music. And he wrote so many great songs that we could sing along, not just by Bing Crosby, but like Blue Skies is one of his biggest. I love the story of God Bless America. When he wrote that song, he didn't feel like he should make money off that song. And so every penny that has ever been made by God Bless America, and there's been some big recordings of it, all of that has gone to the Boy Scouts of America. So he just dedicated that copyright right after it was written to that group because he wanted to support them. I don't know if he knew it was going to be one of the biggest sellers of all time when he did that, but the thought was still there. So Irving Berlin, the stories of him writing this song kind of vary. If the first time it was ever performed was by Bing Crosby on a live radio show in December on Christmas Day in 1941. And 1941, December, we just entered World War II as a nation. And so this song, the idea of I'll be, you know, it's a sad song. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas like I used to know. And just when the country at war and so many people were going away, not all of them were coming back, it really touched a chord, so to speak, in the nation. And for Irving Berlin, the story, sometimes they say it was written in 1939, 1940, but we know the first time it was performed by 1941. Very few exceptions. Every Christmas song that's mainstream popular, that a lot of people in this nation know, every song Christmas-related after White Christmas is secular. Almost every song that we know written before White Christmas is sacred. White Christmas really changed things. Before 1939, 1940, whenever that song was written, 1941 when it was first performed, everything before that was Silent Night, Angels We Have Heard on High, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Those were the Christmas songs that people know. The songs after White Christmas, and so we got in the 1950s, we got all the Jingle Bell Rocks and all these things. There's very few songs today that people know as just a mainstream the country knows that were written after White Christmas that were sacred. So, one of them that's kind of Mary Did You Know is a very popular song. I'm guessing most people in this room know it, but it doesn't get a lot of airplay on non-Christian radio. And so Christians, it's a very popular song. It was written by two people who were working with the Gaither Vocal Band. One of them was a guitar player, Buddy Green, and then Mark Lowry, who was the baritone and singer. And sometimes he gets credit for just writing the song, and he said, I did not write the music. He had one of my favorite quotes. He said, you should know how to read music if you're going to write music. Which is kind of funny, because Irving Berlin did not know how to read or write music. Irving Berlin literally could only play the black keys of the piano. Every song he ever wrote was in the same key. It was just in the black keys. And then he paid a secretary who could read and write music. He would play it for her. She would write it down. And that's how he wrote his music. He would write the words, and he would plunk through, but he didn't know how to write music. And he actually had a piano specially made that could change keys by foot pedals. He only played the back black keys, but he could play in any key with his feet pedals. As I don't know how Monica plays the organ, but those are different kind of foot pedals. But so Irving Berlin wasn't a musician, but he's one of the greatest songwriters of all time. And so with White Christmas, there are a few exceptions. So two secular songs, nothing to do with the religious aspect, before White Christmas that we know are O Christmas Tree, which was not written as a Christmas song. It's the O Tannenbaum. Tannenbaum is not like a translation for Christmas. It was just a song written about the fir tree. And so the whole idea of celebrating Saturnalia, bringing a tree into the house, that actually predates Christmas. But the idea of the fir tree representing renewal and never-ending life at the same time. So that O Christmas Tree, that song is older than White Christmas. Another one is Deck the Halls, which, again, doesn't deal with the religious aspect, but it's setting up the party and decorating and things like that. And that actually wasn't written as Deck the Halls. It's a folk song, had different lyrics. They made Christmas lyrics to it later. And so there are some Santa songs, Jolly Old St. Nicholas, Up on the Housetop, that were written before White Christmas, but they were written as poems. But along lines of writing songs, before White Christmas, definitely Angels, Baby Jesus, The Poor Innkeeper, who I think gets a bad rap, and all of this stuff was before White Christmas. But after White Christmas, there are two exceptions. One of them is The Little Drummer Boy. Little Drummer Boy was actually written before White Christmas, but it was released a little bit after. And so there was a woman named Catherine Davis who wrote The Little Drummer Boy. Does anyone know who made the first recording of The Little Drummer Boy? You all know the group. I'll give you a hint. How do you solve a problem like Maria? The Trapp Family Singers. The family Von Trapp, they're the first people to actually record The Little Drummer Boy. There's the Harry, I'm actually not sure how to pronounce it, the Simone Corral. That's the recording you hear on the radio. So the famous recording is not the Van Trapps, but they were the first to actually record it. So Little Drummer Boy, I heard this fantastic comedian talk about Little Drummer Boy. And he was saying how it's the dumbest song ever. He hates the Little Drummer Boy. There's no drummer in the Bible. And he just felt like it was very repetitive. You know, come, they told me song is dum, 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 dum. And he just didn't like it. But to me, the Little Drummer Boy, which is a very simple song, it's very repetitive. But in the if we do it in choir, the basses and tenors are brum, 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 brum. It's not a lot of fun and excitement for them. But the words of that song, I think, are a great message. That this kid had nothing. He couldn't bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh. All he had was a little drum. And he wasn't very good. But he gave what he had to Jesus. That's all he had. And that's what we're asked to do. So I love the message of the Little Drummer Boy. And I can understand that he felt it was dum, 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 dum. But it's still, the message of the song is great. There's another one that was written after White Christmas that is very sacred. And that's Do You Hear What I Hear? Does anyone know the story of that one? That one was written in October of 1962. What was happening? Exactly, the Cuban Missile Crisis. So there was a songwriting team that wrote that song. It was a plea for peace. And they took this Christmas song. They had been asked by their publishers to write a Christmas song because Christmas songs are great money. Publishers want Christmas songs because you can resell them every year. So it's a great financial thing. The pop hit is there, gone a couple months later. But a Christmas song, you can just keep reselling. In the $5 bin at Walmart, you're going to have those same songs. And so they wanted a Christmas song, and they were like, no, we're not motivated to write a Christmas song right now. But during the Cuban Missile Crisis, they sat down, and they wrote this plea for peace, which is just a beautiful, beautiful song. Do you hear what I hear? And then, other than Mary, Did You Know, I can't think of another sacred song that you would know and like my students would know. The sacred music, there's certainly, I've written some. I'm not saying they're not being written, but just that are mainstream popular. The Christmas music after White Christmas changed, and it's all reindeers and hippopotamus and all these things. And so we've lost that part of the Christmas music, which I think is too bad. Now, one of the interesting things about Christmas music is most of the Christmas music that's played on the radio now was written by Jewish composers that didn't celebrate Christmas. When Irving Berlin, when he wrote this song, he was in California. It was hot. And he was remembering his family. He was working on a movie in California, writing soundtrack for a movie, and he missed his family. His wife and kids were in New York. And so he just was making a list of remembering things. And he told in one of his interviews that he remembered watching his friends when he was a kid celebrating Christmas. He didn't celebrate Christmas. And he's just like out playing in the snow alone. He'd look through the windows and see his friends celebrating Christmas. But he's missing his family. He's missing friends. And so it talks about being out in the snow and the way things used to be because he's lonely. And when World War II happened and the whole nation was just in horror, that song clicked. But it wasn't the religious aspect. Johnny Marks is one of the great American composers, and he wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, Holly Jolly Christmas, three awesome Christmas songs. And again, he didn't celebrate Christmas, he was Jewish. And I'm just gonna throw off some songs that are written by Jewish composers. Let It Snow, Winter Wonderland, The Christmas Song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, Sleigh Ride, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, Silver Bells, There's No Place Like Home for the Holidays, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Santa Baby, Baby It's Cold Outside. All these are written by Jewish composers. And so it's kind of like, for me, it's my friend who celebrates Airplane Day. I think that's great. I love these songs. I sing these songs. My kids are sitting over there. They know these songs. I am not saying that is a bad thing. I'm not saying that my kids are a good thing or a bad thing. But I'm saying secular Christmas, I love you. Secular Christmas songs are not a bad thing. I think that they're wonderful. They're celebrating just this feeling of joy that we have at Christmas. And so much of it, of Christmas, is about celebrating with your family and just being together and just going out and having fun and partying with your friends. I think that is a wonderful thing. And I'm not saying that we need to put the Christ in Christmas and lose everything else, but Christ is there. Christ is in Christmas. And so there's the time for everything. But through all this, when you're celebrating with your family, Christ is there. When you're opening up presents, Christ is there. When you're going out dancing with your friends or you're having people over or we're all sitting in this room together, Christ is here. We don't have to worry about putting the Christ in Christmas. Christ is already there. We don't have to put Christ anywhere. We can't. Christ is there. What we need to do is be that little drummer boy. I can't write this great symphony and write the next great Christmas song, but I can play my drum. Whatever that is for you, I can give a hand to a neighbor. I can smile at a stranger. You can be Christ to other people. We don't have to put Christ anywhere. Christ is everywhere. We just have to be aware of it and be thankful for it and celebrate it and share it. Christmas is over, but Christmas, Christ, is 365 days a year. And not just being a music teacher listening to Christmas music in July, But sharing the message and the joy and the gift that Christ has for all of us, that's what's Christmas. We don't know when he was born, but we can celebrate that every single day through everybody we meet. Merry Christmas. Amen.